Hey everyone, this is John.
And this is Wes.
And this is Ryan.
And this is the Nintendo Show, the best damn Nintendo podcast on the internet. This is the Nintendo 64, I should say, because it is the show that we focus on retro games. Kind of a peek back in time to 21 years ago. So kind of combining the months of August and September this time around. To cover some of the blind spots, because we didn't do a retro show last month. But Wes, you're back. It's good to have you back.
Yeah, I'm back, yeah.
How was Beirut?
Oh my god.
Did you get that fireworks factory taken care of?
We're just glad to hear it was an accident.
Yes. Yeah, we're glad that you're okay.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, god.
You were disfigured horribly, but I'm glad that you're okay.
Oh, that's what that is.
All right. Let's get past this.
Okay.
I have nothing witty to come back at that with.
So, like I was saying, because we do a podcast here, we're gonna take a peek back in time at August and September of 1999, and what a time to be alive.
In my defense, though, guys, it wasn't my fault that they went like incense. I thought they would be all for it.
So... What a time. We're actually getting near the end of the 90s, and what an amazing time the 90s were. We had it all figured out. Everything was great. There were no more problems. We were all just moving forward as a happy little group of human beings, and now 20 years later we realize how wrong we were the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, I think, remember when the biggest debate we were having is whether or not a coach should have been ejected from a baseball game? Good times. You know, things were okay then.
Remember when, you know, being liberal or progressive just meant like, hey, you shouldn't beat up gay people, but you could still be against them getting married?
Oh, yeah.
What a time the 90s were.
Oh, the glory days.
So, let's, I'm going to open it up. So, I sent you guys the notes. If you have anything you want to tag in with, because I just kind of sent like a skeleton. It's mostly, in fact, it is just movies and games. We typically try to cast a wider net, but I was a bit tied up at work, so I didn't have enough time to, and with homeschooling as well, so yeah. I didn't have enough time to do as many topics. But
I'm sure you're, I don't know, your notes here literally just says August 4th, dick.
so that is a movie.
This was a day when John discovered dick.
I was about to say, how old are you at that point? We really shouldn't be discussing this.
I was 14. I discovered it for the first time. I woke up in the morning and there
never
it was.
Never looked down before then.
Staring up at my belly button. So that's actually a film. It's a film starring Kirsten Dunst is in it. It's kind of
right.
Like,
they become like pages, don't they? If I remember this correctly, don't they join the Nixon administration or something?
What?
Yeah, but sort of like it's like a comedy of errors. It's like an inadvertently like have these phone conversations with Richard Nixon, and it's a comedy because of course movies about political corruption in the 90s could be comedies, and like they kind of like. Kind of bring about the downfall of Richard Nixon through these like crank calls that they put into him.
That's kind of funny.
Kirsten Dunst is in it.
Yeah, I forget who the other actress or co-star in that is, but I mean that's kind of interesting. And I think it actually did take a while. I think it was that break-in that occurred at the DNC that was essentially the big thing that brought them under, and it was like over a year.
It took 2 years.
Yeah, it took a long time from the actual crime to have been committed to Nixon being forced out of office.
Yeah.
So.
And you know that's kind of the way, you know.
And it seems like child's play compared to literally what's going on with the current administration. It really is truly bizarre, and it does make it. And I was like thinking to myself, like, does that mean in? I guess at the time, does that mean in like what 20, 30 years they're going to be doing a. Lighthearted puff piece about the Trump administration
about this fucking oil spill.
I don't think there's going to be an appetite for anything whimsical or lighthearted.
No, I don't think this is going to be much of a joking matter for quite some time. I mean, you don't see a whole lot of comedies about like the Vietnam War or about 9/11, and this is going to be akin to those
Team
events.
America World Police.
Sure. Sure. I would love to see a Trump puppet. That would be amazing.
Yeah. I mean, you bring those things up at, Hot Shots?
They're not going to have to, like, too much casting.
You know?
Oh, you know, that's a great idea, Wes. They'll just, like, Weekend at Bernie's a thing. They'll use Trump's corpse in 20 or 30 years.
Put on some music, and he will, you know, just go from there.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if there's a turkey carcass big enough to represent him, though.
So I wanted to... There was a point I was trying to get to here, and it's that the sort of impetus for how our government functions the way it does. It's supposed to be this slow-moving ship, so it can't be quite as, like, reactionary, so there has to be more deliberation. So when you see things like Richard Nixon committing crimes and getting pardoned for it 2 years later, the reason the system moves slowly is so that you don't have these wild reactionary periods to where, you know, you're seeking this political retribution. It's also a slow-moving system because of just of a general fear of government and of governance when the system was set up. So they're trying to create a system with things like checks and balances, which, you know, have some smart ideas in there, but it's a system that gets set up so that government can do the least amount of harm rather than having a government that can do the most amount of good.
Well, I also think that I would say it probably the single biggest thing is the self-selection of truth that happens with the way that the news works nowadays, that you can have a 24-hour news channel that pumps whatever you want to believe and doesn't really question your reality.
You know, and like, that
there was no Fox. If there was Fox News at this point 50 years ago, Nixon may never have felt compelled to step down.
Yeah, but because he would have had a stronger support, because there would have been that fear in Republicans at the time of retribution from him rather than the other way around.
We lost Wes.
Wait.
Wes, come back.
Oh God.
But to your point, yes,
it's a kid, and Marty.
when you have the system that where the attention of people moves so quickly, you know, it's hard to keep the slow moving ship turned in your direction, in the direction of justice, when people are so ready to move on to the next thing.
Yeah.
You know, you need something that's gonna hold people's attention for a long time to get anything done.
Yeah. And that's what somebody observed about Trump, too. They were saying that his major focus, his head pops off the pillow every day with the intent to simply win that day's news cycle.
Mm.
Doesn't care.
Yep.
He doesn't think about the day prior to it. He doesn't think about the day ahead of it. He just thinks about what is immediately in front of him.
And it's a terrible way to run a country.
Oh, absolutely. It's a terrible way to live a life. But that's what he decided to do.
There should be a song written or something where somebody, like, tells you to not stop thinking about tomorrow.
Yeah, you know, wouldn't that be interesting? It's fine. It's funny that you bring that up. By the way, that is literally the worst track on Rumors. Probably like a top 3 album of all time. It's so funny when that song comes on because it feels like it's a car commercial in the middle of an album that's just absolutely incredible. You know?
It's kind of like there's a little jingle right in the middle.
Some presidential candidate, I think within the past 20 years, used that as like a main like theme for their campaign. I don't know. At any rate, we should move on. We shouldn't spend this much time talking about Dick.
Speaking of the 90s, remember Bob Dole? Remember when he ran for president?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Remember when everyone was like, he's too old, he can't do it, and now the two guys we got running now are in their mid-70s?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's kind of...
Bob Dole, wasn't he like a car salesman? Like, who was...
He addressed himself a lot in third person. That was his big thing.
Anyway, so we got a few more movies, and what a time for movies! August
films right here. Oh man, August 6th. You spent that weekend in the movie theater,
yeah. Right? Take us through it.
What are you talking about? That's one day. You just go early, and then you just at night you just leave the theater for dinner. That's just
well. So which one do you see first?
Oh, man,
I don't know.
Gotta start with Iron Giant.
Yeah.
Does this get you warm-hearted? Start it off well. And then you go into Mystery Men, and you're like, oh, God. And then you go into Sixth Sense, and you're like, oh, God.
Is the one that you need the palate cleanser on.
The Sixth Sense?
I think you need something. I would think Iron Giant's your last movie. I think you get the funnies out of the way, you go see Mystery Men, and you're like, okay, that was a lighthearted romp of a feature. And then you see The Sixth Sense, and you're like, that was terrifying, and what a fucking twist. And then you cap it off with Iron Giant, where you go home with all of the feels in the heart, you know, and then right before you go to bed... You think about that scene with the bodies were hanging from the rafters and the gymnasium of the Sixth Sense. No, but again, those are your three films, right? Sixth Sense, Mystery Men, and Iron Giant all came out on August 6th, which... and again, it's nice and diverse. I feel like you got an adult comedy, a kids animated film, and then a really iconic horror film. You know, one that launches M. Night Shyamalan's career, for better or for worse. I think it's got its high points, and I think it's got some deep low points. But
oh, come on, The Village? Come on. I don't...
Yeah, any director would be happy to have had four movies as successful as the ones in his arsenal when you break down his filmography.
Avatar, like, The Last Airbender? Come on. I mean...
you're so salty about that one still.
I am so salty about that one.
Yeah, I'm thinking more along the lines of... oh gosh, I can't even think of... It was the movie that came out immediately after.
Signs?
No, before that.
Unbreakable.
Unbreakable. Unbreakable was good. And then he did that. He finished the trilogy finally, which was great. Like, I think all those movies were fantastic. So those were cool. I liked that a lot. But yeah, you can't look away from something like that Airbender movie or whatever the fuck.
The Lady in the Water. The Happening.
Yeah.
Oh, it's all
yeah,
so bad. The Mist.
Those are some valleys. No, I don't think that was him.
Okay.
So. Yeah, and again, I think it was him trying to chase his own thing. It was him trying to constantly get you with a gotcha film, you know? Which was kind of unnecessary. I think that he could have been a fine filmmaker if he didn't feel compelled to have a button ending, like it's got to be a Twilight Zone episode.
So your arguments of his good movies is essentially The Sixth Sense and then the three movies that are in that trilogy. And then everything else he was a crap.
Again, what was the one that he did with Mel Gibson and Joaquin Phoenix?
Signs.
I'll step up the bat for that one. That one, I think that's a fine film. It's really not that bad.
Really? I think the aliens come down and they get beaten by water?
Yeah, I think that's... You could definitely say that that's sloppy writing, and the fact that, like, it's a habit for the little girl to drink only a sip of water and then leave cups of water everywhere. And that ends up being the gun in the third act, is the fact that their house is filled with cups of unconsumed water.
I did that for a long time when I lived with Mitch. Yeah. I just had like cups of half drunk cups of water all over my bedroom. And then your brother Jeremy visited once, and he walked in. The first thing he goes, "What is the Signs?" I just had them all over the room.
See, it was a good enough film for him to remember that moment, and for everyone in the room to recognize the humor of it. So yeah, clearly a great film. Oh, but again, we don't have to talk about that. So Mystery Men, I think, is a really clever take on what is now such a fucking trope.
I still enjoy Mystery Men.
Superhero movies, yeah. I think it was like this came out and Blank Man came out. I think there was this time where we were just like, let's have some camp fun.
Come on, with, Mystery Men at Dane Cook? I mean...
And hey, William H. Macy is there, Gene Garoppolo, you know.
Hank Azaria,
fantastic. Also in Godzilla, we probably won't talk about that one. The filmography of Hank Azaria is just the weirdest thing, considering that he is an iconic Simpsons voice actor. You know? He was in Gross Point Blank. That was a good movie.
The sort of premise of Mystery Men is that, you know, they're like this superhero squad. You know, they gotta rescue the real superhero, but none of them have any real powers. Like, they have they have skills.
No,
like,
the one kid has them. He goes invisible.
Kel Mitchell is in the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does turn invisible that one time. But... That's like moment. Outside of that, well, and I guess like Janine Garofalo does have like some sort of form of telekinesis with her bowling ball, because it does move in some wacky directions, or is possessed or something. So there is like some sort of existence of the supernatural within this movie. But like Ben Stiller, like, has no powers in the movie. Like, Hank Azaria is just really good at throwing forks.
Yeah,
and.
William H. Macy the shovel thing, right? With William H. Macy's character,
just has a shovel.
Yeah. And they actually address that in the movie. He's got a scene with his wife, and she's like, "This doesn't make you a superhero. You just shovel." Yeah.
Well, it's like Batman. I mean, I guess Batman's he's the tacticianer, you know? It's like the whole reason why no one can ever beat Batman is because he's thought of it. You know, that's such a cheap cop-out, but no one will ever beat Batman because... Except for Bane, because he realized that he has a weakness of a spine. So don't have a spine and you'll get the better of Bane, but aside from that, you know... I mean, and Pussy, he's clearly into the babes, so, you know, he's chasing tail all day long and getting burned for it.
But yeah,
that's Batman.
Sure is. Oh, and what, rounding out, I guess, like, the main attraction of Mystery Men is the silliness in the cast, but just to round out the cast, and Jeffrey Rush as well as Greg Kinnear in this movie.
That's very good.
Crazy. Eddie Izzard. Eddie Izzard has a small role.
Nice.
Yeah. Anyway,
that's a quality cast.
Yep. And Iron Giant. Anything else you want to say about that fantastic animated movie, The Iron Giant?
I hate robots, and I'm glad he's dead. No, I'm kidding. The heart-wrenching film. What is that thing that he says at the end, where he's like, "I am Superman" or whatever? Like, holy shit, that's such a fucking moment.
Mm. But you know, then at the end, like, in just before the credits, you get like the signal going out, and like his arm crawling to put himself back together. He'll be okay.
Yeah. Oh, either that or it's sort of like, did you guys ever see the Matrix, the Animatrix?
No.
It's going to be like that. Oh, you didn't, so never mind. I guess I can't bring this up. They talk about kind of that time that exists in the near future, where we discover the technology to create these androids, and then how we exploit them, and then they violently rise up against us and force mankind underground.
Hmm.
And it is brutal. And that's probably what's going to happen with the giant.
It's going to force mankind underground.
Yeah, mankind wronged him.
He's going to start with John Cusack.
Yeah, I think that's what you do. You know, because he's probably like the answer to all of it too. He's the biggest threat. You know, if anyone's going to undo the robot uprising, probably going to be him.
Yeah.
So, you know.
So, then on August 12th, one more movie before we get into some games here. Bowfinger comes out.
This film has its fans. I remember thinking
like
it was kind of insufferable when I watched it back then.
Yeah?
Maybe I could revisit it.
I haven't seen it in like 10 years. But the reason I liked this movie, and you know, maybe with some fresh eyes, you know, I might not find it so amusing, but I liked it because it's sort of like a heist or a con movie, except the con isn't, you know, ripping somebody off or robbing a bank or pulling off this really elaborate, like Ocean's 11 type heist. They're making a movie, and it's like this sort of guerrilla filmmaking where they have to con a character played by Eddie Murphy into being in this movie while he is unaware that he is in it. And, you know, for a lot of the movie, they use a body double, a character also played by Eddie Murphy, doing his best Charlie Murphy impression. I like just how silly and creative they had to be in order to get their dumb little movie made.
So was this, what was the Jim Carrey film where he was constantly being filmed?
Truman Show.
Yes, does this predate Truman Show?
It does.
Yes.
Mm. So, clearly, Jim Carrey owes them some money.
and Peter Weir.
And Peter
Weir. Also owes them for money. Oh, I want to go, wait, I do want to go back to Iron Giant for a second here, because speaking of things aping other things, so there is a Marvel comic that came out in 2003, and it's called Sentinel, and it's basically the Iron Giant, where a kid who lives in the sort of rural area, his dad owns a junkyard, he builds things in the junkyard,
finds a Sentinel.
A dismantled Sentinel that's trying to put itself back together, and he's helping it. And, you know, a few issues into it, he realizes that he's creating this machine of death and just kind of goes along with it.
I hope it ends with him discovering that he's immune when the Sentinel turns and kills him.
I don't know how it ends yet because I haven't finished that series. I'm in the middle of it.
That kid has to be immune, and the Sentinel now has to fight him. I mean, come on, let's do this.
But I do know the fate of that kid, so I don't know how the series ends, but later on, in the mid-2000s, there's this other limited comic series that apes Hunger Games real hard, and it just takes a bunch of offshoot characters, like X-23 is in it, and basically like puts them in a Hunger Games situation where like you're all in this arena and you have to kill each other. And, you know, of course, not everyone dies. They find their way out, they escape, but one of the characters that is in it and dies is Justin, the kid from Sentinel.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know if he turns out to be a mutant. I don't know if the Sentinel is in that limited series, but I do know that he is fated to die.
That'd be kind of messed up if he's not immune, because, I mean...
Yeah, that is kind of fucked up, where they were just like, no, you were just kind of big. You did something that people were like, wow, this kid did some shit. So, like, you know, your face. We'll put you out there.
It's like, all right, we're going to have all these alligators fight to death, and then we're going to put this one chimpanzee in with the mist as well.
My money's on the chimp.
Yeah.
That shark's got to snag that gorilla out of that tree. Just
hey, it's the food chain, man. Circle of life.
All right. Let's talk about a video game. Unless you guys have anything else before August 27th, because we're fast-forwarding all the way to there.
I got nothing.
Okay. Command & Conquer Tiberian Sun releases on PC on August 27th, 1999. This one was developed by Westwood Studios, rest in peace, and published by EA, who I hope dies a fiery death.
I recently gave them $4.99, so...
Well, I recently gave them $19.99 to play all these games from 1999. Oh, but we already talked about EA Origin and that train wreck.
Yeah.
I did get, after installing another patch, I did get Tiberian Sun up and running, so I've been able to play a little bit. But I do want to get into a little bit of backstory here about this game and EA buying the studio in general. And some of the details may be a little off because I did not forward myself my most updated notes. So I'm kind of shooting from the hip here. But basically, so Westwood Studios starts developing PC games in the mid-80s, I think 1985. And they start to become a really well-known influential force in PC gaming by essentially inventing the real-time strategy. And that kind of culminates with their game Command & Conquer, which is heavily influential throughout the rest of the 90s with games like StarCraft and WarCraft and Total Annihilation and Age of Empires and every other RTS that you can think of. So they end up being, with their Command & Conquer series and Command & Conquer Red Alert, they're like 5 or 6% of the PC software market share in total. So EA is like, we really want to buy them, because EA is just all about consuming and acquiring, and it doesn't matter if they do anything with it or not, they just want to have it. So because of the way like the companies are structured, like Westwood was a development company that was associated or owned by Virgin Interactive, who had an American branch as well as a British branch. And I think the British company was the parent company. But then they were all also under like the Viacom umbrella. So in order for EA to outright acquire it, what they ended up having to do was acquire Virgin Interactive, the North American side. And in order to do that, the British side had to be just totally shuttered. Yeah. So that's what happens. EA acquires Virgin Interactive North America, as well as Westwood Studios and a other developer that was part of Virgin Interactive called Burst, who was based in California, and I think Westwood was in Las Vegas at the time. So this all happens in 98. And of course, Command & Conquer was out in 95. And it was funny because Tiberian Sun, the sequel to Command & Conquer, was teased in 1995, like actually on like the Windows 95 disk for the game. They like had a trailer and like it was like first person mech combat and stuff, so the product changed. But like they announced a sequel at the release of the first game, and you know, right now like 4 years doesn't seem like that long of a time to wait for a sequel to a big franchise, but at the time like 4 years was a torturous long wait for a game like this. And EA doesn't really contribute much to the development of Tiberian Sun, but what they do is they sort of hurry it along. So there are elements of Tiberian Sun that are unfinished, such as the way that bridges work in the game. So there's destructible environments, and there are a lot of things with destructible environments, specifically terrain and forest fires, that they weren't able to solve all of the pathfinding issues with. So there are times where, you know, units will get stuck and unable to find the path they need to go from one side to another. There were also things that were left unfinished that had to do with like a day-night cycle and sight lines of units. So there were like these guard towers basically that would shine a spotlight down, and if you had someone in front of your base and they spotted units coming in, you could hit the incoming units at further range than you could if the light was not on them. And then also consequently at night, units had shorter range because you couldn't see. Like the Command and Conquer series, unlike a lot of other RTSs, never really messed around too much with things like fog of war. It was always just like, if you've been to an area, you can see it.
Yeah.
So the game eventually gets published in 1999 after a few delays. It was delayed in 98. It was also delayed in early 99. And after its third delay, it releases on August 27th. And after that, they'd been fully acquired by EA. They move on to another project, which is also Command & Conquer, but it's a project called Command & Conquer Renegade, which is like a first-person shooter.
It wasn't bad.
Which is a weird direction. You played that one?
I did. Well, your brother played it, and so like whenever I came over to hang out, I would play it. Jamie.
Was he playing that, or was he playing Soul Survivor? Because there were a couple of first-person shooters. Soul Survivor was earlier.
It was Renegade.
Okay. So, Command & Conquer Tiberian Sun also gets a couple more campaigns in the Firestorm expansion, and then EA starts working on a more MMO-style game. Sorry, not EA, Westwood. EA doesn't do any work ever. And what EA does, though, is they take that studio they got from Virgin Interactive, the studio called Burst out in California, and they rename them Westwood Pacific. And they're doing this sheerly out of greed. They want another development house with the Westwood name on it to draw more attention to the product. And this studio, Burst, has like zero pedigree making any sort of RTS or quality software in general. They made a Cool Spot game. If you remember those 7-Up Cool Spot games, I think there were two or three of them. They made one of those for the Sega Saturn. And they also made a game called Golden Nugget 64 for the N64. And then after that, they got their name changed to Westwood Interactive, and then EA said, you're making Red Alert 2. So Red Alert 2, Command & Conquer Generals, those were both made by Westwood Pacific, which is not Westwood, who started the Command & Conquer series. And this all sort of comes to an end in 2003, when EA wasn't making enough money, and these projects that they're dishing out to their two Westwood studios now aren't making as much money as they hoped, so they shut them both down. And once again, EA ruins everything they touch.
Yeah, it really, again, is like the touch of death when you think about it. Like, it took them less than 5 years to bring about the end of this organization.
Yep.
That seems like they actually had a decent lineup of games prior to this, in which they're making a bunch of sequels and stuff like that. They seem to have had some high-profile properties like Blade Runner and Dune.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
Yeah, ouch. That sucks for them.
Hmm. So, the game itself is real fun.
Okay.
It is a lot of refinement of the formula they put down in the original Command & Conquer.
I really like the stealth tanks.
Yep, the Nod faction. Yep. You have your two factions. They have a lot of stealth-type units, as well as like all their subterranean stuff that they have in this sequel now. You get a lot more of like the superpower type stuff. You get like Tiberian missiles and your ion cannon is back and things like that. They actually strike a pretty good balance between having like those more strike force missions where you have like your bespoke set of units with the occasional reinforcements here and there, and like balance it out with missions where you actually get to build your base. But like this is kind of like the gold standard, the prototype for all RTSs, where you know you have like you need to do your resource gathering.
The 4X kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like what is that? Explore, expand, exterminate, something like that.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, everything like from, you know, you need to have your, you know, your power plants to power your base. You need to have your resource gathering to, you know, get all your cash, and like. A lot of other RTSs get more complex, you know, with things like having to gather your minerals and your Vespian gas. Or, you know, if you look at Age of Empires, you have to gather your wood, your food, your gold, your stone. You gotta have all of these resources to manage. But Command & Conquer was much more like, no, get the get the green shiny shit and just bring that back. So, and then you also have like all of your like technology trees, and you know it's not like as complicated as you would see like in a StarCraft or an Age of Empires or like a Civilization. It's more just about like you build the structure and then you get access to the technology. You don't have to do any sort of research or anything like that. But yeah, and you know, like a lot of other early RTSs, the original Command & Conquer, a lot of challenges could be overcome just by building enough tanks. It does get a bit more nuanced in Tiberian Sun because of all of the things like subterranean units and aquatic units. You don't really have like naval units per se, but you have units that can move through and over the water. And you do have limited aerial units as well, mostly just like some attack helicopters on either side and either faction. But yeah, they introduce some things like the medic into the RTS genre, where, you know, and medics do a lot to make infantry more valuable. There were a lot of missions, especially early on, where I was doing a lot of strategic things, building up squads of infantry rather than squads of tanks, because with the right balance of medics to, you know, minigunners and grenadiers, you can last longer in a fight just with a squad of infantry. Wes, you played this one too, yeah?
I did, but it was a long time ago, so I don't remember. Nothing else to add? As you do. No, I don't got much. No, I don't remember much about it.
If you were interested in playing it again, I can send you a link to on how to download EA Origins and the 3 patches that you'll need from third parties
to get it working. I'm good.
Yeah. Well, while it looks like there's some cross-platform stuff going on here, I think it's interesting to note that this sold probably about 3 million copies combined if you add it up across all the different platforms.
Okay. So,
good sales numbers for a game.
Yeah, not too shabby.
I wonder which of the Relerts did the best.
I don't know. Well, it's probably not Firestorm.
That's an expansion to Tiberian.
Command & Conquer. Yeah. Command & Conquer. So.
And I guess
we're looking at sales numbers right now.
I'm trying to.
But yeah, this is also kind of during that like golden age of PC gaming. I feel like this is kind of towards the tail end of like the home computer really establishing itself as competition for console gaming.
Yeah, and after because after this, you know, we really hit the peak of like point and click adventures, and you get like the revolution of first person shooters with games like Doom and Quake. And
which, by the way, next time we do either like a mini or official show, I've already talked about Doom twice. I have a complete breakdown of the game. I really feel compelled to talk about it some more because the game is majestic. It truly is a magnificent thing.
Well, when we usually do this at the end of the show, but why don't we do the mini show next? Because I got some wrap up thoughts on a couple of things that I finished off.
Okay. So, I can't find anything, so I'm not bothering with that. Okay. Yeah, I'm done with the mini show next.
All right, let's move on then.
I got another game to discuss that John's going to be mad at me for picking up another game.
Did you buy another RPG?
No, I did not purchase it.
Was the game we were supposed to talk about that he was supposed to be here for?
This one, Gauntlet Legends.
No, it was like Illulia or something. Some shitty, like, Japanese thing.
Oh, Wes.
What?
Remember how we were talking about Suikoden?
Suikoden, yeah, what about it?
Yeah, of course, Illulia.
The sort of the core team behind the Suikoden games have, of course, left Konami, as everyone should. And they did a Kickstarter for a spiritual sequel to Suikoden.
Oh my god.
Eiyuden Chronicle, something like that.
Not it wasn't just the picture of a middle finger and it says Konami next to it. Just
nope. It actually has a resemblance in sort of graphical style to Octopath Traveler.
Ooh, that's interesting. Yep. So if you want really 5,000 units and to use 3 of them, just Suikoden's the game for you.
But no, this is good. We brought this to fruition.
We did. Yeah. Again. We talk about it on the show, and then like less than a month later, something happens in regards to it.
Yeah, you're welcome.
We are the prophets for people who are listening. One of the two.
So
Gauntlet Legends is a game.
Yeah, it came out on N64 on August 31st. It's a port of the arcade game that was released in 1998. Developed by Atari and then published by Midway on consoles in North America, a different publisher in Europe as well as Japan. And Wes, you have a story about this one.
Well, not about this one in particular, because we were talking off air. Because this one only had four playable classes: the warrior, the wizard, the archer, and the Valkyrie.
Yep.
With different focus of attributes and stuff like that. Where the one that has to do with my story actually has the jester in it. So it was a later one.
So you must have been playing Gauntlet. Oh, shit. All I can think of is Dark Brotherhood. That's not it. We were talking about it off air, and I had the name.
Yeah, I forget what you
said.
Tip
of my tongue. Dark Leg. Never mind.
Dark Legacy?
Maybe.
It's here on your notes here about also released on PS1.
Oh, yeah. Sure is. Look at that.
It's called Gauntlet. Yeah, Gauntlet Dark Legacy is what's it called. Yeah. With okay. The green jester. Interesting.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, you could pick different colors associated with the character. So you could be a yellow jester as well. That way, you know, you could have two people being the same character if you wanted. Yeah. But we're not waiting 5 years to hear this story. So, Wes, out with it.
I don't know how old it was. First off, I had to say I'm not good at telling stories, so I hope I don't ruin the story because I'm bad at telling stories. I'm god-awful at it. But essentially, I can't remember how old I was at the time. I want to say around 10. But last time I was on the air, we talked about my trip to Colorado, and I spray-painted in my grandmother's basement with my cousin.
Uh-huh.
That same trip.
So you were on fire this time, okay.
We're in Colorado, we're visiting my grandmother, and one day my dad grabs us kids and we go to a penny arcade out there in Colorado somewhere, which the actual penny arcade part of it where you use the pennies are like really boring, dumb, like carnival-like games. I don't know what
right.
it was. There,
right.
None of us were interested in that. I came across a giant arcade game with four playable character controls for Gauntlet.
Nice.
And so it was this big old arcade machine in the middle of an outdoor thing, and I'm just playing quarter after quarter and just going through this Gauntlet game. I'm having the time of my life. I'm just having a blast with it. And then partway through playing this game, my stomach gets a little upset.
Oh no.
And I'm like sitting here like playing the game and kind of like kneeling closer to the console and like moving back and forth and doing a little teeter tot and everything like that until eventually I take a dump in my pants.
Oh no!
Oh,
just
grim.
Standing in the middle of this outdoor arcade playing Gauntlet myself, just right in my pants because I just can't. And I couldn't pull myself away from this game. Because it was so entertaining.
Did you keep playing the game, though, with the dookie in the pants, or was that
No, I immediately stopped. Well, I didn't immediately. I played a little bit, like, in disbelief that it happened. And then I was like, all right, I need to address this.
Oh, man. Was it, like, not enough fiber in your diet? Like, did you guys eat Mexican food beforehand or something?
I don't know. I was, like, 10.
Was it solid or runny?
It wasn't running. Like, it wasn't running down my leg.
Okay.
So, wait,
what's your next step here? Did you, like, tell somebody or did you go to a bathroom?
You know,
like,
I told my dad.
Inspect the situation yourself. Okay.
I told my dad, but the problem is, this is an outdoor arcade. There's no bathrooms here.
No restrooms?
Not that I know of. If there was, there may have been a porta potty somewhere. I mean, I didn't know where one was. And I mean, it had, like, a chain fence. I mean, it was just literally, like, they could box it up in a day and throw it in the back of a van and left. Like, it was just the most.
So, in your defense. First of all, I admire your dedication to the game. Second of all, in your defense, if you would needed to find a bathroom, how could you have?
Exactly. I couldn't pull myself away. I was like, I still got four quarters here to play this game. I'm going to hold this.
And here's the thing. You're a youth of barely 10. I mean, what is expected of you? You're playing Gauntlet. Of course you're going to poop yourself with excitement.
So my dad takes me to a bar. That was the closest open place, and I slipped into the bathroom and everything. And this ends with me leaving my underwear there.
ditched it in the bathroom trash can.
I felt so bad for whoever. Thinking back on it, I feel so bad for whoever was working that day.
It turns out the bar had the Simpsons, so he crapped himself again.
Yes. It was just a nightmare. Horror show. Just horror show. Those tidy whities didn't stand a chance.
let's take this to the next step. So you ditch the underwear. Do you then go back to the arcade, or is the
we went home after that. We went straight home. So was the
like, no one else in the family needs to know about this, or did he like your dad burst through the door?
No, we all knew about this. He grabbed my sisters, and we all went.
Man,
because it's just him and his three kids.
When's the last time anyone in your immediate family has brought up this event? How long has it been since anyone's...
Zero. I think really? I'm the only one who still remembers this event.
Oh, God.
Wow. I bet I can mention this at the next family outing, and everybody would be like, I don't remember that happening at all.
Man.
Now, what did your dad, like, immediately, like, spill it? Like, we need to go, there's been an accident? Or did he, like, try to cover for you a little bit? Like, hey, we gotta get out of here. We just gotta make this quick stop over here, and then we're going home. Like, well, was there a cover story, or was it just like, nope, this is the truth. Deal with it, everyone.
I don't think... Well, my sisters are younger than I. So, uh-huh. I mean, at that point, they're just at that age where, like, who cares? I mean, they're kids, whatever. It's just,
Did you guys ride home with the windows down?
I remember riding home and just, like, staring intently on the floor and just focused on my shame. Uh-huh. And then just going straight into the bathroom again when we got there just to, like, double check my work. Like, it was just to make sure everything was good. Like, it was just... I'm seeing her wearing these jean shorts without underwear on.
So I wasn't really sure. I mean, at the same time, I feel like you guys were building up this story, and Russ was like, no, this isn't going to be the best story. And at the same time, this is a profoundly tragic story. And yet, it wasn't the kind of gleeful Wes bashing I was hoping for.
Yeah, there's nothing, like, sexually shaming about this.
Yeah, I thought they were going to have caught you, like, jerking off to the wizard or something.
You know? I was worried that I built it up too much.
No, you buried the lead, man. You didn't tell me that there was going to be... I thought maybe you were going to rip a fart or something.
I don't know. Much worse than that.
Wow.
No, just... like, I thought there was going to be a story, like, somebody, like, opens the bathroom at the wrong time, and there you are with, like, the cover art for it, and you're doing very shameful acts. Like, and no, I'm on your side on this one. I think people should have done more for you here. Like, make sure there's a bathroom. Provide a cover story. Don't ever tell... Like, we should be the only two people, aside from your dad, that actually know about this. I think he did you wrong by telling people.
Oh, well, I don't think he told people.
Okay.
Like, it's my mom, I'm 100% sure my mom doesn't know this story. Mm. My older sister, no way that she knows this story. My younger sisters, I doubt they would remember this story.
Okay.
Oh.
I bet if I would bring it up to my dad, he would remember. But it would take him a minute.
Like, I'd be like, oh no, but that was the same weekend I bought that Kodak camera. I got all the pictures, kid.
I just remember I was like hunched over that game console, like really close to the button, so like just moving back and forth, just doing everything I can to like not.
you can't pause the game. If you leave, you're gonna lose your progress. So
I'm like eight quarters into this game. I got stuff to do here. Like it's...
exactly. Like again, you know. Not the story I was expecting. I feel bad for you. Again, I was thinking it was going to be like, yeah, they caught you jerking off to it, and you were, like, dressed as the Valkyrie or something.
You know? I made a costume of the Valkyrie.
So speaking of the Valkyrie, like you were saying, Wes, they're the four playable characters in this version, and they all sort of exemplify different types of stats. So your warrior is going to be, like, your physical attacker, who, like, has the most strength. Wizard is, of course, going to be your magic user. The archer is going to be the speedier, ranged character. And the Valkyrie is going to be your tanky, defensive character. It exemplifies the armor stat. And these attributes are going to increase as characters level up. There's a level up system. And you save your progression in the game, but it uses a password system. Which, to me, is just a lazy, it's such a last gen solution to, you know, the problem of, you know, turning the game off. Like, we are fully into the N64 era. You know, put some effort into your arcade port. I mean, have a save system.
How many months ago did Ocarina of Time come out?
Yeah, like,
well,
Mario 64.
There's like, something that can also be said where you're going to another game and you can just say, like, or if you want to progress somebody along, you're like, want to have different save files, essentially, you can be like, here's the code for, like, you know, completionist run.
Yeah, thing, but or, Ocarina had three files.
Yeah, I mean, I guess.
I'm not saying it's right or it's the way to go about it, but it sure does make it easier if you're going to go over to a friend's house and play with him, and he's just like, man, doesn't it suck that I always start with level 1 characters? And you're like, well, good news, I got level 10 characters.
Oh, wait a second.
You know, yeah, I mean, you know, it's an interesting idea to use passwords in that way. I mean, you could also just as easily bring your cart over to your friend's house and continue off of your own save file. I don't know. Yep. Like, the idea, like, okay, we have these characters that we're playing together and have this password system.
You just put
set
it on
up
your
that.
Thumb drive. Just bring it over your flash drive with all your games. Yeah, we'll play them right now, man.
There are also memory cards for the N64. I'm playing a game right now that requires a memory card that plugs in your controller. So,
speaking of fucked up memory cards, I think we're going to talk about another gaming console that came out around this time.
Yeah, we sure are.
Bury the lead.
So, you know, like I was saying, the passwords are probably just a holdover function from the arcade. They did make other changes to the home console version. Most notably, in the N64 version, you have an ability to sell off items that you find for cash. And selling off items for cash is a useful function of the N64 version, because then you can then buy items that will buff up your stats and further enhance your character that you can only save through a password.
Yeah.
You do need the expansion pack for this, as you will for a lot of N64 games that we're going to be talking about from here on out. Aside from the arcade version, this is the only version of this game that has 4-player co-op. I guess that's a bit of a mislead, because there is a Dreamcast version that also has, I believe, 4-player co-op, but the Dreamcast version is sort of like this hybrid between Legends and Dark Legacy, the game that Wes was playing when he shit himself. Wrongfully. You were the victim here, Wes.
I was the victim here.
People should have been looking out better.
Yeah.
This game also released on PS1 that only has a 2-player. Even though there is a multi-tap for the PS1, I guess it just didn't go through the effort of having the multiple characters available. But yeah, I mean, any other... I never played this game. Ryan, did you get a chance to play it at all?
Honestly, not recently. Not since when... I remember getting this cartridge, like, probably, gosh, like 5 months ago, maybe, if not longer than that, because I was like, oh, this will be a fun game to play and lead up to this. It was on this list of games where I was like, these will be a fun set of games to grab. And I'm glad I did. Like, I had a lot of fun playing this. This is just totally my style of game. I mean, are you kidding me? It's like a...
It's like early Diablo.
Yeah, precisely. You know, this is just totally my wheelhouse when it comes to gaming. And I had a lot of fun playing it. I remember it being... very, very difficult, though, if you're trying to play solo like me. It's one of those games where you get swarmed really quickly, and I think from what I remember playing, like, Valkyrie was the easiest one to kind of stay alive as, but the progress became slow because it's just constant streams of baddies. I don't know if there was a way to make it easier or something, and maybe I was putting on it too hard of a difficulty, but...
Well, it was one of those things where there were constant streams, but there's also those little nests that you had to break.
Oh, yeah, but I mean, good luck taking out a nest when you're constantly getting swarmed.
Yeah, exactly. So they just kept coming and coming. It wasn't one of those games where you just go into an area and you just, it's the set amount of guys. Like, they keep coming.
I mean, and yeah, you can just feel it. You feel it build up within you, you know, and you're just, can't explain it. It just comes out of you all at once, and, you know.
Yeah, we get it.
Yeah, the game and the difficulty are definitely attuned to a co-op style of gaming. Like, this game pre-pandemic would have been a really fun one to just do some couch co-op, because that's the fun of the game, is having, you know, a few buddies and taking on these hordes of enemies. It is like very much
to play too. This would have been for real.
Yeah. It is very much like in the vein of like a beat 'em up. The fun is in that just sort of like overpowering force and just mowing down tons of enemies.
Yeah, and then you shit yourself.
Yeah. So next,
I feel like we probably, yeah, I feel like we probably should have had more to say about this game. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a fun game when it came out, and you know, I enjoyed revisiting it again. It just, it definitely does seem to need that multiplayer element.
I wish they would come out with a new one. Come on, yeah. Here we go. This is it, John. This is the real test. So they need to come out not a remake, just a brand new Gauntlet.
You know, we don't have a perfect track record because I talk about Advance Wars and Fatal Frame all the time. maybe like has to be like a combined like desire from the both of us. Like we both have to really.
You don't
want
desire
the game.
Another Gauntlet.
Who do you think? Owns the rights, I do. To it, though? Who do you think owns the rights?
Who does? Own
Probably, maybe
for that?
Still Atari, but Atari's like this weird amorphous company that kind of changes.
Nah, that's probably not happening. I don't think they listen.
Yeah, we don't like Atari anyway. But like mechanically speaking, Gauntlet isn't like the deepest of games. You know, you have your fight button and then your move controller. Like, not really too much to break down there.
I think they had a couple of different abilities because there was like the regular, like for instance, I just saw a clip of the mage casting just shooting bolts, but then the mage would like rain down rocks from the sky. So I mean, I said there are like abilities you unlock and things.
Oh, the
game warrior
that
was chucking axes. So I mean,
the game that this probably closely paralleled today, as far as games go, would be like the Marvel Alliance series.
Sure.
Yeah.
Where you've got four players, and ideally you want to build a team that synergizes well. Usually with a tank, with a striker, with some kind of support character like a healer, you know, and a magic user. Again, you call them, you know, Valkyrie and Jester or whatever you want, but like they're essentially that really is the spiritual successor to the Gauntlet franchise.
If they do another Marvel Ultimate Alliance, any more X-Men?
Yeah,
I hear that Marvel Avengers game that's coming out is not very. I haven't heard anybody say anything good about it.
Yeah, you know, it seems like it might have like some fun action set pieces, but it also seems like it's a little bit sloppy. Like, especially the camera seems like it might have some issues. And yeah, they really like tack on the microtransactions. And they're really trying to get
Not good.
Yeah, all the money they can out of you.
Okay, so it looks like, oh hey, get this. Arrowhead is a studio that I guess would probably technically be considered the owners of Gauntlet. It looks like they revisited the property in 2014. They also made that Magicka series. I don't know if you guys ever played any of the Magicka series.
It's pretty
good. You all play identical wizards, but you're different colors. So
very diverse. Got it.
Yeah, like like a red and a yellow, and they all interact in different ways. So it's sort of like this strategy game where you play with each other, and you can very easily kill each other if you're not careful. So, but you're also at the same time insanely powerful if you coordinate your attacks.
AKA John would murder us constantly, Mister. I will pop your bubbles in Mario all the day, all day long.
Yeah, over it's cooperative, nothing. But it's also competition.
Yeah, if pop the bubble over the pit.
Wouldn't be allowed to.
You know, I was playing a few months ago, I was playing Super Mario 3D World on the old Wii U with Mika and Ripley. They're starting to grasp that sort of thing. They wanted to play Cat Mario. And they very quickly figured out that the person who got the most points in the level, because they showed like that little meter at the end of every level who got points, would also be the person who wore the crown. And they would be very, very sad if they were not the person wearing the crown.
Yeah.
And they weren't quite sure how points worked just yet. But, you know, after a few levels, Mika started to figure out, like, if I got the green star or if I kill the enemies, I'll get more points. So when she would see one, she's like, let me get it. I want the green star. So even this cooperative experience for her turned competitive because she wanted to be.
That's when you look at her and go, no, you have to earn daddy's love. And you just snatch it.
I'm not going to let you win. If you win, I'm not going to throw a fit, but I'm not going to let it happen. So, another game. N64, August 31st. This one is Hybrid Heaven. This one was developed and published by Konami. This game was directed by Yasuo Daikai, who also most recently directed Bomberman over Konami. Please quit, sir. If you're still making games, don't work at Konami. Go make games somewhere else. And this one was produced by Kazuhiko.
You want him to make more things?
Yes.
You like him? Okay, you like him. Okay.
He seems perfectly fine. Like, he's probably a stand-up dude.
This is Konami.
Like, yeah. To hell with Konami.
You're just so anti-Konami. You're fine.
I am anti people who don't want to make games. And if he wants to make games, he should quit. So this game's like a
brawler or something? Is that kind of what it looks
sort
like?
Sort of. It's produced by Kazuhiko Uehara, who also does the production of MLB Power Pros, that series. He also did tons of sound design back in the day. He did the sound design for Turtles in Time, for example.
Oh, that was a great
but
one.
This is a weird sort of hybrid, see what they did there in the title, of a game where it's part like 3D action game. Not too dissimilar, like Tomb Raider is a comparison that gets brought up, where, you know, you're moving around in third person, you have like your button that turns you into an aim mode, and you go into like an over the shoulder view, and you can move your gun around and shoot at things. And you are by way of example, I haven't played much. I first started playing it today. I was going to play a little bit more of tomorrow because I thought we were recording tomorrow. That is not the case. So I've only played about an hour of it. But you're moving around this environment, and just by way of example, in the first level, you need a card key in order to open the next door that you need to go through. So you go and you talk to the person who gives you the card key, and then like, oh wait, the code's expired. Go find the other room that has a thing that will give you the updated codes. And you have to go to find that room and then work your way back to the first door. This is all like very small geography. It's not nearly as complicated. Like, it's taking me longer to explain how you do it than it takes to do it. And then the other half of the game, or I guess the other half of the gameplay, are these RPG-esque sort of battles that you go into. So there are like drones and stuff throughout the level that you can just go into first person, or I guess over the shoulder mode, and shoot with your little gun. But then there are larger enemies that you encounter, and when you do, you get the screen transition as in an RPG, and you enter the battle sequence. And it's not like a purely turn-taking RPG battle sequence, but it's close. So the enemy has the ATB meter that fills up, and so do you. But when the enemy comes to take an action against you, you can choose from a bunch of different commands, such as to defend, or to try to sidestep out of the way, or to counter. And depending on what command you use in response to their command, it will deplete your meter, you know, X amount. So countering is going to deplete your meter the most, because you're dodging their attack and doing damage to them. And it seems like that's the only disadvantage of using like a counter-strike as opposed to sidestepping or guarding, because when you do that counter-strike, your meter gets reset to zero, which will delay your own like offensive action. If you choose like guard, you know, it's exactly what it sounds like. You take minimal damage. If you choose to sidestep, you have to like choose a direction that you want to sidestep, and sometimes it's successful and sometimes it's not. And sometimes your counter strikes are also not successful. And this seems to have to do with the type of attack your enemy is using. And you get a bit more information or get more familiarity with what they're going to use when you get to see your own sort of offensive techniques. Because there seems like there can be a lot of nuance to this battle system. Because when it's your turn to take an offensive action, you can choose to punch or kick. But then when you choose that, you then go into a deeper menu. Like, do you want to punch with your right or left hand? Or do you want to do like a jab or a cross type punch? So there's a lot of different things that you have to work through in these menus to set up your attacks. And so far, I've only fought like three battles, so I'm not quite sure what the nuance is, like what the advantage of using certain attacks are. But as you are doing your, you know, you're defending and you're attacking and your, you know, offensive maneuvers, you will level up. But it's a bit like a Final Fantasy II or a Saga game where you're leveling up specific attributes rather than a character. So, you know, if you use a lot of left arm punches, your left arm techniques will level up. If you take a lot of hits to your head defense will level up.
Okay. That's not at all what I was... just looking at the pictures of this. Didn't seem like it was going to be that kind of game.
Right. Right, and that's definitely not the impression that you get if you're just looking at some art or if you're looking at a description of it. And also not the type of game that you see a lot on the N64 in general. Like, we've talked a lot about shooters and fighting games, and there's a lot of, like, racing games and sports, but these, like, kind of technical games with, like RPG systems to it, you don't see a whole lot.
Yeah.
And I don't know how exactly I feel about it, this game yet. I think it might be a little bit too convoluted for its own good. Especially early on, because after one battle, I was learning new techniques, and I did not have time to familiarize myself with the old techniques. I also think that Konami, in particular, in this game, was still trying to figure out how to be more intuitive with the way that they are designing their 3D action games, because there were a lot of things in the game where it wanted me to do something, but it wasn't finding a good way of showing me that's what you wanted me to do. So, by way of example, there was a laser gate in my path, and there was a crate also there, and so far to that point in the level, I had climbed on crates, but I had not shot them yet, and I could not find a way around. I couldn't find a switch to press. So I was like, here, well, maybe I got to shoot this crate. So I shot the crate, and nothing happened. And after wandering around for another 5 or 10 minutes, I just looked at a guy. I was like, I have no idea what they want me to do. And the guide, I eventually found the point I was at, and it said, shoot the crate 5 times.
Like, oh, why the
hell would I ever think to do that? Like, maybe if I were 14 and had all the time in the world to kill, but I gotta pick up my kids from school in 30 minutes. Shoot the crate 5 times, fuck you. And then, thankfully, I kept reading the guide. It's like, once the crate blows up, there's a button behind it, or like some sort of switchboard. Shoot that 3 times. I'd have been super pissed off if I hadn't read that, and then I shot the thing that got revealed by shooting the crate, and nothing happened.
Oof.
There's still a lot about 3D action games that they really haven't quite figured out how to show you how to do things without just outright tutorializing. And that's something that, you know, of course gets improved on as games improve. But I think just goes to further show just how prototypical, like how much in its infancy this sort of like polygonal 3D gaming was at the time. And I further goes to prove like how well Nintendo handled so many different games, because you know, we've had our discussions about some of the things that maybe don't hold up so well and things like Mario 64, but goddamn, they nailed so many things with that and with Ocarina of Time and a lot of their first party software. Whereas games like Hybrid Heaven, even games like GoldenEye, like the gunplay in GoldenEye, they did really well, but sometimes a lot of like the objectives are a bit opaque, and even more so in Hybrid Heaven, because at least GoldenEye had the little menu that can open that would like give you your list of objectives, even if it doesn't tell you exactly what you need to do to accomplish them.
Hmm.
So that's August.
You know what's interesting though about this, because from watching the gameplay, the game that it reminds me most of, I guess in a way, is a game called The Bouncer. I don't know if you guys remember this. It's actually a Square game.
Sure.
Yeah, you brought it over and we played it together.
Oh, for real? We did?
Yeah,
I have your copy right over there.
No way. You guys remember that game well?
A little bit.
Apparently, it came out 3 months later. Yeah, it was a Japanese only release at first, in December of the year 2000.
We're 99.
Oh, wait, sorry. Oh, I guess it'll be a year and 3 months. So it's not that far removed. And by the way, the game reviewed terribly at the time because I guess Square is trying to make an action game instead of an RPG.
No. It still reviews badly.
Oh, yeah, does it? Well, I mean, it got them used to making characters look like complete assholes and idiots, which they would continue from Final Fantasy X on.
Oh, God, and the character design. What's the guy's name in Hybrid Heaven?
Johnny?
Diaz or something like that? Anyway, no. Anyway, people are calling him something like that. But he wears, like, of course, he got his tight blue jeans, and then he's got, like, this flesh-toned leather jacket that at first it, like, looks like he's not wearing anything, but this flesh-toned leather jacket also has, like, a bare midriff, so he's got some abs showing. God, such fucking terrible design. Really bad.
Well, when you got abs, you want abs, you want like that, you want to flaunt them.
Well, yeah, but, you know, you got to be, like, classy about it.
How are you classy flashing abs?
Not with a flesh-toned leather jacket.
Oh, you know who pulls it off? I don't know if you guys have watched those Bill and Ted movies recently, but Alex Winters is wearing mid-drip shirts the whole time, and his abs are, like, fucking ridiculous.
Jeez.
Like, what the hell was this guy doing? He must have done, like, 2,000 sit-ups a day or something. But yeah, it's a look you rarely see on guys.
So,
I'm gonna start rocking it. I don't have any abs, but I'm gonna do it anyways with my big belly.
You could get some abs. I have faith in you.
I mean, eventually
you can just modify all your existing shirts. Just literally cut the bottoms off of them, and there you go, man. You're done.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, I do have abs. They're just under a very protective layer of fat.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, that's going to put a cap on August of 99. Let's move over to September, unless you guys have anything.
I don't have much in September, I see.
Yeah.
I don't have my notes very fleshed out, but I do have some thoughts here. Okay. Unless you guys got anything else about August.
Four things on it. No, I'm good with August.
Okay. So, first up, we got the launch of a new system. The Sega Dreamcast launched in North America on September 9th. Launched with a few games, including Power Stone, Sonic Adventure, and Soul Calibur.
Power Stone.
Did you guys ever own a Dreamcast?
I didn't. You did.
I did, yeah. Actually, I had a Dreamcast when I was a kid.
Oh, I meant John. Didn't you own one, John?
Yes, I had.
I think you guys had it in the house. It may not have been yours, but
no, I had a hand-me-down, and I've owned a couple of Dreamcasts over the years, because one that I had as a hand-me-down got broke, and then years later, after the Dreamcast had already died, I found a Dreamcast for sale at an electronics boutique for like $20, so I snatched that up.
Cool. I didn't know you had one, right?
Yeah. I quite liked it. I thought it actually, the games that I had on there, I really enjoyed playing. And I also remember kind of the thing's downfall was that was also at the time one of the easiest games to burn discs of existing games. Like, I remember I had probably a stack of about 50 games that I had burned because it was just so easy to, you know, easy to rip it off, which in retrospect is probably why the console failed, but hey, you know. Doesn't mean I didn't get to play some really fantastic games. Like, I'm trying to think of what was on there. Marvel vs. Capcom 2, one of my all-time favorite games. A blast to play, and the Dreamcast setup was perfect for it. The Dreamcast controller really was ideal for it. I actually think of all of the Resident Evil games I played, mostly they were on PC. I think I played Code Veronica on Dreamcast. That game is fucking fantastic, too.
There was the Crazy Taxi.
Yeah, Crazy Taxi. I remember I burned that one and played a ton of it. Yeah, I'm trying to think of all the other ones I played. None are immediately coming to mind, but I remember having quite a bit of fun with that. I don't remember playing Power Stone at all. Actually, I don't think I remember.
Great.
I mean, I know, was it Soul Calibur? Of course I know that. And yeah. I'm aware of this character named Sanic. People talk about that a lot. But yeah, I've never played Power Stone. So tell me.
You alluded to it earlier, but it did have that that large controller as well as that memory card with a little video screen on it.
What a dumb idea, where they're like, hey, you know, they have to have a storage card. Why don't we make it play a video game too? And then they can buy an even smaller like cartridge to put inside of the cartridge, you know?
what a silly idea. So my experience with the Dreamcast is also fairly limited, even though I did own one. I think the game that I probably played the most on it was Code Veronica. Other than that, like, I had a copy of Soul Calibur. Dead or Alive was another fighting game that I had on the system. Sonic Adventure. Oh, Marvel vs. Capcom 2. I had that game on the system as well.
Yeah, again, one of my all-time favorites. I love that game to death.
Yeah.
So, House of the Dead, that was on there. I remember that one. I mean, that's really more meant for an arcade, but, you know, hey, sure enough, it was there. Rez? Do you guys remember that game, Rez, at all, by any chance?
Yeah.
That was really cool.
Sort of a rhythm game.
Yeah, it was a really sought-after possession you could get, but there was, like, this vibrator attachment that you could get. And there was, like, this weird thing where they were saying, like, I'm not sure the truth to this, but I just remember it being sort of the gossip of the time, was that they were sold out in Japan because women were using them as vibrators.
Gospel.
Yeah, gospel. Agreed. 100% accurate.
Oh, that's funny because I never put two and two together here, but Dez used to watch this this anime, and I don't remember what it's called. And I only saw a little bit of it, but it was kind of like that. This girl, she was sort of like this awkward preteen, and sort of like this outcast in school because she was like very tomboyish. But one of the scenes that I saw from this anime was she had won a prize, and the prize was the. It must have been that video game because it came with the vibrator stick, and
yeah.
she like had to like carry it home like in her hands, I guess, for some reason because you have a backpack or something. And then like when she got home, she was playing it and like she fell asleep playing the game, and like her dad comes in the room and like sees her there with like this vibrator stick like next to her passed out body.
Oh my god.
It was intended to be very awkward, and they pulled it off.
Wow. That's pretty funny. And probably very accurate.
With a game of Gauntlet on the TV.
Yeah, there's probably a lot of young Japanese girls that discovered themselves thanks to Rez.
Hmm. So an educational tool for that reason.
Absolutely, 100%.
So you mentioned like the piracy for the Dreamcast. Not only Dreamcast games, but like PS1 games and like a bunch of different retro games. You'd find like all these ROMs and stuff you just burn onto discs and play through the thing. It also had a modem, the first system with a built-in modem in there. And one of the other reasons for its downfall was that it kind of got trampled by Sony and the PS2, because Sony had this really powerful marketing campaign even before the PS2 was out for the PS2, which would release almost a year and a half after the Dreamcast. But it did a fairly good job of getting enough people to hold off on buying a Dreamcast because of all the hype around the PS2.
Yeah.
And it didn't also help that Sega was pretty much following up a failed system in the Saturn, which never had a foothold in North America or any territory outside of Japan. And Sega was pumping out hardware and hardware attachments at a rapid rate. The Saturn had released just 4 years prior to this, and before that was the Sega Genesis and the 32X and the Sega CD. Like, they were crazy into the hardware business, where they're just trying to give you all these attachments. It was very difficult to keep up with, especially for, you know, children, where these things are primarily marketed to at the time.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So Sega, you know, they ran fast and they burned out quick.
Yeah, their window for being at the top of the heap was just so short. You know.
Anything else about the Dreamcast that we want to get into before we push forward here?
No, good.
Okay. So there's a game coming up on September 15th. I don't have this game yet, so I'm going to put this one on the back burner as far as an in-depth discussion on it, because it does look interesting. It's called Goemon's Great Adventure. This is for the N64, came out on the 15th. Also had the same producer as Hybrid Heaven, because it's also a Konami game. And this is actually a long-running series in Japan. They don't localize it often in any territories outside Japan because the Goemon character is kind of based on this sort of a folklore Japanese character. It'd be like if somebody made like a lot of like John Henry or Paul Bunyan games and then were trying to release them in other territories, everyone would be like, who the fuck is this? Why do I care about this guy? And so there's like 30 of these Goemon games across all different platforms, from, you know, like Famicom and then console games, PC, mobile phone games. Like there's a ton of these games that get released. I don't know if the series is still going because Konami doesn't like to make games anymore, but there's probably a pachinko game or something. But they've only brought 5 outside of Japan. One for the Super Nintendo, I think it was called Mythical Ninja, starring Goemon. And there are a couple of N64 games, and one of the N64 games came out in 1998, so we missed that one. Depending on how I like this one, I might go back to it. But and then there was a couple of Game Boy games that also came out in the series. But this is a side scroller, which
this doesn't look good, John.
We'll see, because it reviewed okay, and you know. A lot of these N64 games have, you know, people very impressed with the tech. So, you know, the reviews get graded on a little bit of a curve. I don't know. Like, and the cartridge isn't expensive. So,
it doesn't look good for the point of the N64.
I don't know. I disagree. It's a 2D side scroller. I think it looks all right.
This doesn't look good.
And we're going to get
the right one.
We're going to get to a point in January and February where there are no notable N64 games coming out. So this one's going on the back burner.
I don't know, John. It sounds like you're drinking that Nintendo Kool-Aid.
I'm drinking the Konami Kool-Aid. This is happening.
This is not looking good. So.
I mean, there's a better than 50% chance that it's not good. But it's also not a huge expense, so don't try to talk me out of this. I'm committed.
I mean, Wes is a guy that'll stare you in the face and say, you know, I shit myself. I know what it means when something stinks.
Yeah. I know what the cost of
my eyes are open.
Your games. I know what it's like to suffer for your game.
If we're talking about video, like just literally any video game that came out, if I've got this list right, September of 99, Resident Evil 3 Nemesis came out.
In Japan. It's not out in North America until November, December.
Yeah, but Ryan.
Yeah. I nearly put that on the list as well until I like actually
It's about Americans, though. Raccoon City. I don't think it's Raccoon City, Japan.
No, it sure isn't. It's in the Midwest town.
Sure isn't. Oh, I heard Netflix has optioning a Resident Evil series.
Yes.
I've said it so many times, just of all the, I know video games don't translate well to movies, but like they made a good story. Like just literally tell the story of the first Resident Evil game and you've got a fun haunted house spooky zombie movie.
Yeah,
like,
I mean like,
I never understood why they got that wrong.
Yeah, I mean you could have fun with the environment and the wackiness of the Resident Evil setting and like the sort of tension of having like zombies everywhere, and you don't have to make it to where like, okay, well now we gotta go to the kitchen and find the key so we can get into the billiards room.
Yeah, they don't have to do all that, and like, you know, Wesker's a really cool bad guy.
Yeah.
Or I mean, he even too- starts, he has a heel turn, so like you really don't expect it, you know. And Chris is cool, and you know, Barry's there.
Barry's a goober.
Yeah, Barry's there for a laugh. Jill Valentine. I mean, these are cool characters. So.
Yep. And eventually you get far enough in the series where you can introduce the best character, who is Claire.
Yeah, true.
I thought it was that one guy from Veronica.
Steve?
Yeah.
No, you can have Steve, but you have to kill him quick.
Yeah, I don't know. I think Leon's probably my favorite character.
Yeah.
I think him, what he does with the Ada character, I think, are kind of really good tee off for continuing the story that doesn't have to be about the small scale life of the fucking Stars people.
Hmm.
I mean, does a Resident Evil 4 movie would be good? Like, that one could be more action-oriented. I guess Save the President's Daughter from these zombies.
Mm, starring Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah. Yep. I say Keanu Reeves plays Leon.
Sure.
Yeah, down for that. About that.
I think it sounds good.
I like Keanu Reeves. I don't think he needs to delay everything. Again, I think Alex Winter should.
But you bring up Resident Evil, and I think it's an apt comparison to some of the stuff we've been talking about, like with Hybrid Heaven. Like, you see the way Capcom is able to use the sort of limitations of the PS1 and just kind of like create something new and interesting rather than something super ambitious. And I think that that's kind of like the difference where we're at in terms of like the sort of software that appears on different systems, where you have the PS1, where a lot of things are just refinements on stuff that had already been established, like on the Super Nintendo, and then you have some things where they are getting creative within the limitations of the hardware, because it's not as powerful in a lot of respects as an N64, so you have to use a lot of things like pre-rendered backdrops. And like, what sort of games can you create, you know, within those confines? And you get something masterful like Resident Evil 2, which does eventually come out on N64. We'll talk about that in a matter of weeks. And you see how well crafted that game is, and like how, you know, clear of a vision of what they wanted to make with that game. And then you look at games like Hybrid Heaven, which has some interesting ideas, but it seems like just a bunch of ideas thrown at the wall to see what sticks.
Yeah.
And that's something that I've noticed about, you know, a lot of things we've talked about in the N64 library so far. They're either like very arcadey experiences, or they're just like these experiments where they're not quite sure what they're going to do with the tech that they have available yet. But let's move over to September 15th. We got another movie, and that is American Beauty, starring noted pervert Kevin Spacey.
Yeah, not at the time. And what's so funny is that in that movie, he gets killed for a misconception of him being a pervert.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh.
Makes you think, I guess. I don't know. I mean, it's a great movie, though. You guys have seen it, right?
Yes.
I haven't.
Love it. It's a good movie. Oh, you haven't seen it? It's
Nope.
I don't know. Would you say it's worth revisiting? Do you think Wes would like it if he actually saw it and sat down and watched it?
I think it's worth revisiting, yes. I don't. Yeah. It's hard to tell what Wes is going to like.
Yeah, that's such a weird spectrum of movies.
It has a number of really iconic moments in it, like...
If it's not M. Night Shyamalan destroying one of my favorite childhood TV shows, then I'm not going to enjoy it. I mean,
that's your own fault for investing any part of yourself in the Avatar series.
Yeah, you know, let's take a sidestep to Avatar, because, like,
Really?
I've seen quite a bit of that animated series. I don't see what all the fuss is about.
I hate you.
It's fine.
Well, this is my last show, guys. It's been fun doing this for the past 6 years with you. I'm going to miss it, but at the same time, I can't be a part of anything that has to do with Jonathan Huston now.
Wes, I'm going to be totally serious with you for a minute. Wes, are you ready for this?
I'm ready. I'm ready.
10 years.
10 years?
Not six. 10.
We've been doing this for 10?
Yes.
Ugh, that's gross. All right, I'm back in. That's too much time of my life to invest in this to just give it up willy nilly.
Wow. You know what's kind of fucked up about, at least from my perspective, is like, imagine if somebody said that Cheers is a garbage sitcom and no one should watch it, but they loved Frasier. You know, it's kind of how I feel about hating Avatar, but liking the Korra series that came out after it.
Really?
You know. Yeah, like, that was genuinely enjoyable.
I thought Korra was okay.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed Avatar. Avatar was just fun. That's all it was. It was just a goofy... It was just fun.
Was it though?
I gotta hate you both so much.
That's fine.
I give you my pooping the pants story. And you just then takes said poop and rub it all over Avatar, and part of me dies. And
yeah. Well, I mean, hey, we're moving away from American Beauty, which was really a fantastic feature. Chris Cooper's awesome in it.
Kevin Spacey.
Go ahead.
From what I remember, it's a very dark, almost nihilistic, in a lot of, especially with the character, the sort of neighbor kid who, you know, carries his camera around everywhere.
Yeah. Documenting truth.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's sort of like, I guess that's the whole point of it, is saying that, you know, kind of this vision we have of idealized American home is not what it is, and that we're all uniquely broken. And that we all harbor a lot of horrible things.
Yeah, sort of like an anti-90s movie, because, you know, the 90s, as we discussed before, was like a time where, you know, we thought we had it all figured out. Like, this was it. From this point going forward, it's just going to be more of this.
Yeah. I don't know. It'd be interesting to watch it today, because I feel like a lot of what made it seem so dark has now sort of become such a standard component of a lot of dramas. I feel like a lot of dramas I watch nowadays, it's almost expected to have these really heart-wrenching moments, and just kind of ugly. Seeing people just be genuinely ugly in a lot of different ways that, you know, maybe they weren't used to. Maybe they weren't used to, you know, and like Annette Bening not being like the perfect housewife or fucking whatever, you know. Like, and just a lot of really bizarre moments happen in it, and a lot of interesting things that just kind of stick with you, even if you necessarily can't say what it meant or define what it meant. It struck you in a certain way.
I know what you mean, but it was never like my perception of it isn't like I saw a thing and I'm not exactly sure what it means, but it never strikes me as like pretentious.
Yeah.
Like I don't think that the movie was ever trying to outsmart me or condescend.
Yeah. And I looked at the other features that came out in September, kind of a bunch of weird movies.
Yeah.
Like, so, I don't know. American Beauty definitely is the only one worth mentioning from that little run.
What are you talking about? Blue Streak came out.
That was one that came to mind, the Martin Lawrence vehicle. Yeah.
I actually enjoyed that movie. I don't care.
Better than American Beauty?
See that this is why
American Beauty.
This is why Wes is so hard to predict, because he went and saw the Martin Lawrence movie.
Well, we rented it when I was a kid. That was the thing. I remember watching it at home with my sisters and my dad and everything, and this was just, every time it comes on TV, it's just like, oh, it's Blue Streak. Remember, we enjoyed this. I mean, come on, it's got Martin Lawrence and Dave Chappelle and
Dave Chappelle. Other people. Okay, now I am interested.
Luke Wilson.
Oh,
these other random people. I don't know. I don't know actors. But, you know, I enjoyed it. I don't care.
Okay. All right, let's bring it home with Age of Empires 2 out on the PC on September 30th.
Oof, that was my birthday.
He is a criminal pretending to be a cop to get a diamond out of a police precinct. Come on, man.
In Age of Empires 2?
It's the plot of Blue Streak and Age of Empires 2.
Yeah, both. I mean, come on. And he makes a good cop because he knows how the bad guys think. Come on, it's a great movie.
Yeah. Martin Lawrence, I think, also voiced Caesar in the game, too, if I have that right.
Is Age of Empires 2 the one that had the weird glitches, like where you can, not the glitches, the codes where you can get the little wolf guy that shoot the nukes and the infinite money and...
The money, yes. Like, you can give yourself resources by putting in, like, the little debug codes. I'm not sure about the wolf guy with the nukes. I hadn't heard of that.
Yeah, I remember a guy who wore wolf skin.
Okay.
And then he shot nukes. It was a pretty big hack.
Sounds like you wouldn't need more than one of them.
Yeah. All right, go on with the actual game. I'm done derailing it.
Age of Empires. We already talked quite a bit about RTSs and made some comparisons to Age of Empires as we were talking about Tiberian Sun. When it comes to like the sort of scope of it, it does try to do some more intricate things with the RTS genre. You got a bunch of different
types of units, infantry, as well as like mounted units and siege weapons. Naval units are a big part of the game. And every sort of faction has similar stuff, but sort of different twists on it. So some factions, some civilizations won't have access to every type of unit, or maybe they'll have like one or two exclusive things. So rather than trying to like have like these diverse, balanced factions, it's more about managing your technologies and your research, rather than building up your own like diverse force and using your exclusive stuff tactically to take down enemies. It's more about a race for resources and better tech. I don't know. I like the Age of Empires games. I didn't spend as much time with them as I did with games like Command & Conquer or even StarCraft at the time. But just kind of a different flavor of the RTS. It's always, you know, welcome. It was a good time for the genre. So, I think we are getting toward the end.
Up next is, you wanted to do a mini show?
Yeah, we'll do a mini show next. Anything else about 1999 before we close
out
here?
Do you have anything lined up for October? Because I see a game that came out.
I have a going list. What's the game that you see?
South Park, Chef's Love Sack.
Oh my
gosh.
Released on
the
N64.
October 12th,
1999.
We're going to need to... I'm going to need to see the list, because we should be getting close to Resident Evil 2 as well, the N64 port, which would be a really good one to talk about.
God, I love that game so much.
Yeah.
Oh, we got Jet Force Gemini.
Yeah, Jet Force Gemini is pretty soon, too.
I think that is October.
Good.
If this list is right. So there's October. There was the Pokemon Yellow Special Pikachu Edition.
Yes, we'll have a Game Boy game to bring up. Excellent.
Grand Theft Auto 2 came out for the PS1.
Yeah,
nice. Rayman 2 Great Escape. Nocturne, Pharaoh, Ballistic, Septeracore, I don't know, just Spyro. No, that's November. Yep. So yeah. The South Park game, Jet Force, Pokemon we can bring up. Well, there's a few things we could talk about.
Cool. Good, that'll be a good show.
Yeah.
Before we close it out here, we do have to address the rankings.
Yes.
Oh, true.
So it should be at the top of the notes that I sent you guys, where we are. I'll just do a top-to-bottom reading for the listeners here so they can follow along as well. So 31 games so far in our objective ranking of all things N64. Number one, Ocarina of Time, Mario 64, Star Fox, Super Smash Bros., and Banjo-Kazooie are in the top five. Going down from number 6, GoldenEye, Pokemon Snap, Doom 64, Blast Corps, Mario Kart 64. Then at number 11, Mario Golf, Star Wars Rogue Squadron, Diddy Kong Racing, Hexen, Quake 2, Castlevania 64, Pilotwings 64, 1080 Snowboarding, Wave Race, Killer Instinct Gold at number 20. Then Mario Party, Yoshi's Story, Mischief Makers, Knife Edge, Nose Gunner, Bomberman 64, The New Tetris, Quest 64, Tetris Sphere, Gek 64, Dark Rift, and Turok.
Oof.
Ooh. At what point do we stop reading out the list? Because that's getting to be a pretty big list.
Yeah, I'm going to have to maybe start posting it in the show notes so people can just look at the rankings when we address it.
If I was more active in this podcast, I would actually do some work on our website, because we do still have it.
Do you mean our Podbean page or the old website?
No. The actual website that Jeremy and I made, GameUserNames.com.
Okay.
It's still there. It still has the collection of all of our podcasts.
Oh.
So.
But what do you guys think Gauntlet goes on here?
I really like the Gauntlet series, so...
Okay.
Gosh, where to put... I'm not going to say...
I can't tell you with any of these games. I really don't really have much of an opinion for this.
So, a game that I would probably say it's a little bit better than. Slightly better than. Star Wars Rogue Squadron.
Okay.
You want to put that high? That's nice.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is the kind of game that you shit your pants to, man. This is for real.
It's worth it. It was worth it. And he would do it again.
I would. I'd do it today. In my own living room.
All right, that's I'm totally fine with that. I haven't played the game. I don't have a particular glowing opinion of Rogue Squadron. It's a good game, but I'm not going to fight it.
Yeah, that's
fine.
And it's also maybe kind of gets a little nod for its uniqueness. Hmm. There's really nothing like it on this list that I'm seeing. It's sort of like, Hexen and Quake are right by each other, and Doom 64 is above it, and it's like, you know, we have a lot of similar kinds of games that are starting to emerge on the list where we kind of can say, you know, this deserves to be here relative to another game that's, you know, of a similar nature. Yeah,
I'd even put it above Mario Golf. I mean, that's just...
Yeah. I'm comfortable slotting it in at 12.
Around there. Right, yeah, 12. That's fine.
Okay. And as far as... Hybrid Heaven is concerned, I'm going to slide it in, but I'm going to reserve, I'm going to put an asterisk on it and reserve to move it around, because I'm going to try to get into it a little bit more and try to figure out the sort of weird battles that it has. But for now, I'm going to put it down toward, I'm going to put it at number 26. I'm going to put it just below Bomberman, but above the new Tetris. So, not high in the list at all.
Yeah, it's going to have to earn something to get any higher up than that, I would think.
Yeah, it looks awkward.
It is. And it's either dense and tactical, or it has all of these options for no reason. I'm going to try to figure out which.
Yeah. Goemon's Great Adventure looking like it's going to go at level spot number 30.
No, I have high hopes for that game. That's going to be a top 10.
The only reason why it doesn't, the only reason why Turok doesn't beat it is because Turok is just plain unplayable. So I mean, that's just
Turok makes you shit your pants for other reasons.
Exactly.
All right.
Of rage and disappointment.
I was so disappointed I shit myself.
I just couldn't hold on to anything. I just wanted to let it all go and just move on.
Well, I could kill myself or I could just shit.
It was a close one.
Alright, well, next is the mini show. Well, look, sounds like we all got games to talk about. That'll be good. Do you guys, We talked about doing some ghosts in October to go along with a spooky theme. You guys had anything about Pokemon you want to talk about in particular this month? You want to do a ranking? Do you want to try to do something a little different?
I thought we were going to do a ghost ranking. I thought that was the plan.
October. October. Spooky.
Oh, over October. It's over us for this month.
Yeah.
I don't know. We could try to throw together a quiz game.
I'd be down for a quiz game.
Yeah. I'll try not to do so many questions about types and what things are we resistant to.
I'm totally fine with those. Keep those.
Strictly do nothing but those.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
God. Yeah. Question about how you spell a Pokemon's name.
I want to memorize more charts.
I'm just going to put together a quiz show on the Pokemon TV show.
Oh, that's genius. Perfect.
No, I think I'm prepared for that as well, because I think all the questions are going to be about that Kingler that evolves when he's fighting the Elite Four.
Oh, that was such a great episode.
Yeah.
He grabs the Executor. He vice grips the Executor. Like, head leaves. And then just evolves and stomps on it. It's great. It's such a good episode.
That's such a bad matchup, immediately,
And then he immediately hyper beams a Golbat. Because, you know, Kingler learns hyper beam on evolution.
Yeah, great. John, having experienced them both. It's great. American Beauty or that episode of the Pokemon series? Which is better?
Ooh.
That's top. Yeah.
That's a good episode of Pokemon, man.
You know?
That Kingler. I mean, Ash, everybody was like telling him, don't use that Krabby. You never battled with a Krabby before. Why would you use it? And then, boom, he just sweeps it.
Hmm.
That Krabby just whoops everybody's butt. Oh, such a good episode. It was very endearing.
I don't remember that episode very well. Was Misty pissed about the whole scenario? Because she's, like, supposed to be the one repping the water types.
Well, you know, it's Misty, so, you know. She's always, like, angry at Ash about something. Why do I know this much about this TV show? Man.
and you know what? Like,
that's my childhood.
She's supposed to be like the water trainer, but he's got himself a Squirtle and a Krabby. Like, what is she repping? She's got like a Goldene. Does she even have a Starmie?
She has a Staryu and Starmie.
Why isn't she not using that Starmie all the time?
She has she uses Staryu more than Starmie. It's ridiculous. She has a Psyduck and a Horsea and a Goldene.
She ends up with that Togepi, but that's more of like a set piece.
She does. She has a Politoed in the later seasons.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
So
In the newest one, she uses a Gyarados and then Mega Evolves it.
Oh.
So, you know, stuff's going down. Why do I know this much about the show?
Are you still watching it?
I have a nephew.
Oh, good. Good. He needs to learn.
And he's just started. He just grabbed his the starter kit for Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, nice.
Now I get to teach him Dungeons and Dragons, which his father was thoroughly opposed to. And every single time I see him, tells me that he blames me for this. Which I never even mentioned it to him. He did this all on his own. All right, on that note.
Yep. So we'll do a mini show, we'll talk about some pokes, and then we'll wrap it all up at the end of the month with the official show. That's it. That's the end. Until next time.
So long.
Bye.